What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Skydiving. This is amazing.
Yeah, but you know what else is amazing? An iPhone 6S for just $49 at Metro.
Really?
Imagine streaming all the way down with that amazing camera.
I'm switching.
That's smart. You know what else is smart? Parachutes.
Woo!
Switch to Metro and get an amazing iPhone 6S for only $49. Metro by T-Mobile. Phone offer requires port in of number not currently active on T-Mobile network or active on Metro in past 90 days. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knocks. This is Adam Frommel here with Dan Favalli. Andy cannot be with us today because he is on baby duty. He has provided us with his picks for the Pacific Division, which is next up in our season preview series. So we're going to be talking about the Los Angeles Clippers, the Sacramento Kings, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Phoenix Suns, and some team called the Golden State Warriors. As always, we're going to start from the bottom, work our way towards the top. I think everyone knows who's at the top already, but we will still proceed as if that's going to be a surprise. So I'll turn things over to Dan right at the beginning to tell us who he thinks will finish last in this division.
It has to be the Suns, doesn't it? I think I went back and forth with them and the Lakers before we started, and I don't think I actually know that that's what I did, but there's just, their roster's weird.
Grocery Outlet Bargain Market is your home for huge savings on name brand products. This week, have a fun and delicious start to your morning with Post Nutter Butter Cereal. 19-ounce boxes are just 99 cents. That's a wow savings of up to 80% versus traditional grocery stores. Also, Star-Kissed Chunk Light Tuna, 5-ounce cans are buy two, get one free. That's a wow savings of up to 64%. Limit three free. Offers good through March 12th.
Grocery Outlet Bargain Market.
You could probably see them being really good, and moving Brandon Knight to the bench makes them a little bit deeper, but just what does this team have? Like their point guard position might be set, and that's pretty much it. Devin Booker's rookie season was good, but it was like sort of a Kristaps Porzingis effect where he started off so hot at one point that we just assumed that he stayed that hot throughout the entire season, and his efficiency plummeted as his usage went up. There was definitely spots there, and I think he'll be good. But what does this team have? The Jared Dudley pickup was good, but you don't know what's going to happen with Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender. The center position is one of the most depressing in the NBA right now with Tyson Chandler and Alex Lynn. You don't know what TJ Warren is. They're probably going to have to use him almost exclusively at small forward at this point, but he might be a four. There are just a lot more question marks on this roster than I think on the Lakers is.
It's kind of weird to say that after the last couple of years, but I'm on board with that as well. I think Phoenix is one of those rosters where I really like a lot of the individual pieces, like pretty much everyone that you mentioned. I think Eric Bledsoe is one of the more underrated point guards in the league, but he can't stay healthy. Brandon Knight could be a good sixth man if he accepts that role. Devin Booker had a great second half to the last season, but he was inefficient and operating in a role he's probably not going to play in once everybody's healthy around him. You know, TJ Warren has potential. He doesn't space the court out like you're supposed to as a modern-day wing. Jared Dudley could be a good leader, a good floor-spacing stretch four, but, you know, it's another new role for him. He might be asked to serve more as a mentor than an actual player once this team starts losing games. And, you know, like you said, the center position is just a complete disaster. Even that magic Phoenix Suns training staff couldn't heal up Tyson Chandler last year. So I look at this roster and I feel like it's something that I want to watch. Like, I will tune in to Phoenix Suns games this year because they're going to be fairly entertaining for the first half until the margin is already ridiculous, but they're not going to win much.
We talk a lot about how good Phoenix's training staff is, but their backcourt might be cursed just because Eric Bledsoe has been dealing with injuries since he came here. Brandon Knight comes over and he starts dealing with injuries. Even TJ Warren was pretty banged up last season, even though he's not in the backcourt. Not an indictment of their training staff. I'm just saying they have more injury question marks when you throw Tyson Chandler in there. And the defense is going to be terrible. There's like when you look at their starting lineup, I guess, which would project as Chandler, Dudley, Warren, Booker, and Bledsoe, you could see that maybe they would get like 3 to 4 pluses there, but I'm not sure how that would happen. Like when you dip into the bench, when you're dealing with two rookies and Chris and Bender who are going to get minutes, Brandon Knight's never been a particularly good defender. Devin Booker has a lot to learn there. This defense is just, it looks like it's going to be terrible. Even if you
where
say,
where are you getting 3 to 4 though? Because I look
Jared
at that.
Jared Dudley can be a plus at the four. Eric Bledsoe can be a plus. No, he can't. Don't insult Jared Dudley. He could be a plus at the four for them.
Maybe a minor plus. I see Bledsoe and Chandler as the only like distinct positives there. Booker definitely isn't. Warren definitely isn't. Dudley might be.
Dudley and Warren might be, which is where I would get 3 to 4 from. I think you can easily say that they might be.
So 3 to 4 optimistically, which isn't really an ideal situation.
No, I'm not saying that – I didn't mean that was good. I was just saying if you look at the starting lineup, they could have more than half be defensive pluses, which is fine. But are we even sure the offense is going to work? Just I looked this up the other day. Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight between them have had one season where they were a majority starter for a top 10 offense. It was Bledsoe in 2013-2014 with the Suns. And it's just like we talk a lot about how deep this backcourt is, how good it is. They didn't even perform well together offensively when they were on the floor last season, and they played more than 800 minutes together. So there are question marks there as well. And where do these bigs fit on offense? How are they going to use Bender? Tyson Chandler's rim-running days as a pick-and-roller are over. What does Len really bring you on the offensive end? Marquise Chris has bounce. That guy's got spring-loaded knees. He looked like he could be a fun rim runner, but
he had a great preseason game last night too.
I didn't see that one. Who are they playing? Was it the Jazz the other day? He did not look particularly polished on the offensive end, like even around the rim. But that dude has springs for knees.
It was against the Mavericks last night. He ended up with 17 points, 6 rebounds, an assist, 2 steals, and 4 blocks, and made 3 triples.
He made three. Wow.
Yeah.
If he has 3-point range, then that would be really scary. It was a very risky, I guess, move to get him. But I do like him from watching some of his college highlights. And if he's shooting threes, he's probably going to be their best shot blocker and rim protector this year.
He could be an absolute stud in a couple years.
Right. But so the brightest spot for this team, I guess, is what I'm saying is offense. And I'm not even sure the ceiling is particularly that high.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think the thing that Suns fans can take away from this year is going to be just how bright the future can be. Because you look at the team and, you know, Bledsoe is still in his prime if he can stay healthy again. Tyler Ulis has looked good in limited minutes. Devin Booker obviously has star potential. I really like TJ Warren's game and then the Chris Bender combo at power forward. You know, maybe eventually they'll learn to play together and you lose the need for that traditional center because Chris can protect the rim so well. Right. So, you know, I don't think it's out of the question that we could be talking about a playoff team in the West 2 years down the road. But I mean, their ceiling this year is probably going to be what, like 35 wins?
Right, and you don't even know who's going to make it to the, like, they have to try and shop Tyson Chandler. Yeah. Is Brandon Knight going to be here by the end of the season? There's also, it's kind of weird right now. If you got rid of Chandler and Lynn, maybe it opens up a little bit because you can use Bender and Chris for some center, but having Dudley and Chris and Bender slotted as the fours, that just makes for a little bit of a crowded rotation. You can move Dudley over to the three, but then you're just resigned to not using PJ Tucker anymore. Mm-hmm. So I would think this team is going to make some moves leading up to the trade deadline, or at least try it, and that sort of contributes to their incredible uncertainty. They're going to be fun nights. This team will likely play super fast, it looks like, from what they're doing in the preseason, even what we know they did last year. And I'm really, if Chris is going to shoot threes and make them, I'm really excited to see if they can maybe get him involved as a pick and roll rim runner as well, because he's not too tall. Was he 6'9"? I would put him at center. He could touch the ceiling. Like, he's just absurdly athletic and explosive.
Plus, you should watch this team because they have awesome jerseys, and that has to count for something.
It does in my book.
Absolutely.
That's why I almost put them over the Lakers.
It's really the only reason, right?
Speaking of which, I would have the Lakers fourth, very obviously.
I would too, but we have to
be
go
better
over
than
wins for
Suns?
The Suns first.
Oh, wait, don't we do that after the fact?
No, we need some
I'm rusty. We haven't podcasted in like 2 or 3 weeks.
It's okay. I'll forgive you. Maybe. I'll buy you some time by saying that Andy actually had the Suns in fourth over the Lakers and winning 30 games.
The Suns will be lucky to get 25. I think 22, 23 is a fair assessment for this team.
I actually have them winning 26, which is probably a little bit optimistic, especially if they do trade away some pieces midway through the year. But I don't think that the West is going to be quite as top-heavy this year because we don't have teams gunning for records like we did last year with the Spurs and Warriors. So I think there are a couple more wins to allocate to the bottom feeders.
But the Suns are going to be the foremost bottom feeder.
They are going to be the foremost bottom feeder, but I at least think that's like kind of a neck-and-neck competition.
Again, you could see it, especially if the offense is good. But they'll be lucky to win 25, like very lucky to win 25 this season. I would be genuinely floored if they get more than 25.
But are the Lakers going to get more than 25? That was an awesome segue, right?
Yeah, that was amazing. That's tough. They'll get 25. I question whether they'll get to 30 because I don't know. I don't think the gap between them and the Suns is that gigantic, but they have some more proven talent on the roster that you can really say, hey, they're going to get some wins. You have Luol Deng. If Timofey Mozgov is even a little bit better than he was for the Cavaliers last year, he's going to improve the Los Angeles Lakers' center rotation. Lou Williams really pumped in points off the bench. I hope he's not starting for long, so I think they're bringing Jordan Clarkson off the pine right now. But Clarkson and Ingram in the same second unit, I mean, man, that's super fun. And even Julius Randle has looked fun. He's still kind of that wild card, but he's clearly healthy now. He survived all of last season. And maybe he turns into something under Luke Walton. And I like the head coaching in Los Angeles more than I do in Phoenix, which I think in the long run is going to account for a few extra wins. And then we talked about this before the podcast, D'Angelo Russell, with the exception of a performance or two, looks like he's been a beast. Yeah.
I kind of want to start with Mozgov, though, because early in the offseason, I was trying to defend his ridiculous contract a little bit. And it was mostly because, you know, you look at how this Lakers roster is composed and you see all the young guys who are playing key roles and still operating on rookie contracts. And you understand how they had a little bit more money to give out to a guy that they needed to go get. And that is a little bit of mental gymnastics there because this contract is probably indefensible. It's too
you
much.
Could have gotten for
yeah,
it was like $4 million. You could have gotten Bismack Biyombo,
exactly.
Which I would have.
And this came so early in the offseason that it felt like they were just like trying to jump the gun and didn't have any confidence in their ability to lure better free agents. But all of that said, it's kind of like an Eric Gordon situation, where you looked at Eric Gordon's contract with the New Orleans Pelicans when he was just ridiculously overpaid, and it kind of denigrated his entire reputation, even though he was like a beneficial player because he was such a good shooter. And I think it's going to be a similar situation here with the Lakers, where everybody is going to pan this contract and look down on Mozgov because of it, even though he is bringing something to the table here. Like, he's a good rim protector when he's allowed to play, and he has enough touch on the offensive end that he's not a total liability. You know, he can step out and make some mid-range shots. When he was still in Denver, you know, the coaching staff actually wanted him to take some three-pointers. I don't think he should be doing that, but he is a skilled big man. So contract indefensible, signing him is defensible, and I think that he can actually start pushing this Lakers defense into more respectable territory, especially with Luol Deng there too.
Which is fine, but I will never move away from the dollar amount, And even if you want to justify signing him, any type of long-term investment for him, he's 30 years old, isn't he?
Yep.
Any type of investment in him shouldn't be, well, he might be able to do this. If he would have had a better year last season, then I think we would probably still harp on the dollar amount, but we could at least say, well, look, this is what he does. But we know what he can do and what he's done in the past, but he's never done it for really long stretches. And that's what concerns me.
I guess I'm biased here just because, you know, I had a chance to interact with him when he was still in Denver and interact with the coaching staff. And he was one of the most beloved players here because of his work ethic. You know, just one of those guys that was tirelessly trying to make his game better, would stay in the gym longer than everybody else. You know, as cliche as that is, it was pretty true for him. And I think that a lot of his issues with the Cavaliers were psychological. You know, like he didn't feel like he was a valuable part of that team, especially when they started replacing him with Tristan Thompson. So giving him this new situation where he's suddenly imbued with confidence again should make him a little bit more valuable.
I mean, maybe, but also the talent around him isn't going to be as good, especially defensively. Yeah. So will his impact even be felt as much if he is a quality defender there? The investment for me was just indefensible. I get what you want him to do, which is just put a body in the paint and protect the rim and maybe give you some mid-range jump shooting, or if you can finish at the rim, which he's never been particularly great at. He always endears himself to where he is, it seems. New York, he became a fan favorite. Everyone was pissed when he was moved in the Carmelo Anthony deal. That might have been because the Knicks gave up their entire team in that trade. But $64 million, it's tough to get away from that number. And it would be different if they like maxed him out for an entire year because you just had that money. But it just stays on the books. At the same time, they don't really have a young guy, I guess, at that position they could really look at. Tariq Black, I would like to see more of, and the Lakers have him. So you don't want to see Mozgov cut into those type of minutes. Or even Larry Nance can be thrown in at the five sometimes. So they had the money, they could spend it. If he's good for them, he's good for them. But he can't be a part of their big picture. He's not going to play a big role long term. So I hope at least him being there, it'll probably be more acceptable if the Lakers are still willing to give these younger kids some legitimate spin or experiment with lineups where they're smaller at the five and really trying to space the floor, because he's not going to do that for them at the center position. His jumper has never really been there. He shoots them, which I guess helps. So you look at it, but you know, maybe we want to see Yi Yang, how do you pronounce it?
Jean Long, I think.
Jean Long. Maybe you throw him at the five. I know he's always been a power forward. So as long as Mozgov doesn't impede progress elsewhere or experimentation elsewhere, you don't have to hate him on this team, but the dollar amount just makes it so tough to even remotely like.
Yeah, I mean, I get all that, and I agree. I think that I'm just a little bit more optimistic about his on-court ability here and trying to look past the money, because the dollar signs are not on the court when they're actually playing. But moving past Mozgov, I think if you look throughout this Lakers roster, there's a lot more to like than there is in Phoenix. I think that D'Angelo Russell is already ready to be a true impact contributor. Jordan Clarkson, Lou Williams, Luol Deng, Brandon Ingram, who I don't think we've even mentioned to this point. And even though he's struggled a little bit in the preseason, like, that dude can play basketball. He's awesome.
I just hope those Durant comparisons don't psych him out long term.
Yeah. I mean, Julius Randle, great rebounder, looks like a developing offensive player. I wish that he would try and go to his right occasionally, but that's not going to happen.
He just tries. That's why I like him. He looks like he tries so hard, even kind of on defense. I don't think he'll ever be good or close to good, but you can appreciate someone who tries.
Last year on defense.
So was the rest of the Lakers, though. True. That was
true.
To your D'Angelo Russell point, what do you think what's the level of difference that's been made by just playing for a coaching staff that doesn't actively despise him? Yeah.
You went even stronger than I did. I think that's going to make a big difference. It's almost like supporting your young players is beneficial.
No.
I think it's as simple as that.
We got like, Byron Scott on here. He needs to talk some sense into you.
What in the world was Russell supposed to do last year when everything he did got criticized by Scott? When, you know, the trigger for pulling him out of the game was like if he blinked his eyes at the wrong time, he was going to spend the rest of the game on the bench. Like, there's something to be said for letting your players actually play with confidence that if they make a mistake, it's okay. And you get to keep going, and you're not running back down the court looking at the bench like, is some guy like running to the scorer's table so that I'm going to have to go sit down? Like, being able to actually concentrate on the game makes such a huge difference.
Right. And again, not having Kobe there, just that whole swan song tour just hanging over you gives you more freedom by default.
I mean, basically what I'm saying is that under Luke Walton, D'Angelo Russell is going to average 32 points a game this year.
Well, without question.
I'm sure that you heard it here first. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
32 seems low.
Yeah, it might be. I'm trying not to be too bold because, you know, some points have to go to Julius Randle.
Do you think he'll get over 20? He's been over 20 in the preseason.
I kind of do. Like, just because this team is going to play really fast. They're really young. They're going to try and run other teams out of the gym, and the points have to come from somewhere. I don't trust the front court's ability to score consistently. I don't think that Dang is much more than like a tertiary spot-up shooter on offense at this stage of his career. And Russell is pretty clearly the number one option, and he's going to have the ball in his hands a whole lot.
He needs some help. Just the offense hasn't looked great in the starting lineup. Jordan Clarkson has probably been their second best offensive player. Lou Williams has been okay from three, given that he's chucking almost five a game, I think I saw, but his shooting percentage has plummeted, and it's kind of amazing to me that with the way that his teammates are playing around him, Russell, and some of them are playing really bad, it's amazing to me that he shot so well from the floor for the most part. I know he had that, was it against the Blazers, he was 0 of 9 from three and 6 of 21 from the floor, and he kept shooting and wouldn't pass, and that's probably still going to be his biggest downfalls. They also need him to be a legitimate point guard. Like right now, he's still just this combo guard or this James Harden type player, not comparing him to him, but he doesn't even pass as much as James Harden. Granted, his usage isn't as high, but he hasn't been as good or as consistent facilitating as he needs to be. Yeah. And they need him to be, especially if you're going to leave Clarkson on the bench, because Lou Williams, as your secondary playmaker, is not ideal.
So before we move on from the Lakers, I want to share my harebrained Twitter idea with you. I think that we need to create a fake Byron Scott account, and then anytime D'Angelo Russell does anything negative during this sophomore season, we should tweet fake quotes from it.
That should have been something you shared off air. Now everyone's going to know it's us.
Yeah, but like,
including Byron Scott, who I know for a fact listens to this podcast religiously.
Damn it. I'm sorry. I messed up.
Well, I'm not ready
to messing up.
Well,
how many wins?
I'm not ready to go there yet. I'm wondering for you, this starting lineup, like, is Clarkson going to stay out of it all year? Is Ingram going to stay out of it all year? I'm wondering how much longer how long you go before it becomes clear that, hey, put Randle on the bench, start Ingram at the three, this quasi 3-4 combo with Dang. And Lou Williams, I'm assuming, is going to be moved this season. That would be my guess. Like, there's going to be a contender who just wants his spot-up shooting maybe, or just his option coming off the bench. I'm surprised to see. If you would have told me at the beginning of the summer that both Lou Williams and Julius Randle would be in the Lakers' projected starting lineup, I would have laughed hysterically. I still kind of don't even believe it.
I think by the All-Star break, we're going to see the Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, Dang, Mozgov combo.
You think both are going to be in it then?
Yep.
Ingram and Clarkson. I hope so. That could be a really, really fun lineup.
I mean, Lou Williams is just, I mean, he is a sixth man. Like, that's what his role should forever and for always be.
And again, I don't have anything against him or Randle, but both of them seem more like second unit talents. And I get wanting to bring Brandon Ingram along slowly, especially with the expectations that were kind of foisted upon him towards the end of his Duke career. Those Kevin Durant comparisons didn't really exist at first.
Yeah.
And then they all of a sudden just started cropping out of the woodwork, probably because people had more time on their hands.
I also think there's a chance Larry Nance earns a starting job with this team.
At the five, then, right?
Either at the four or the five. It wouldn't shock me if he outplayed Randall and moved there pretty quickly, like maybe within a dozen games.
Do you think there's a – who's more likely to stay on the bench then all season, Clarkson or Ingram? Probably Ingram then.
Probably Ingram. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Clarkson was the opening day starter at the two.
It wouldn't surprise me either, but the preseason is kind of like just squashed that. But he's played, I believe, from what I saw, he's played with Russell a good deal,
yep.
But they're just running him off Russell more than they did last season. And maybe it's just easier to have Lou Williams do that in the interim. I guess I wouldn't be surprised either. The fact that Lou Williams has been starting is what's been very, very shocking.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see what happens with Brandon Ingram on offense, whether they're going to give him the freedom to make some plays, because if you look at this roster and rank the playmakers, it would probably go Clarkson, Hertas, Russell, then Ingram, or is Ingram a better playmaker at this point than Russell? Russell's probably up there. I'm not talking about score. I'm talking about is this someone you want passing the ball or setting up others.
I would have put Russell at number one. And I think
he's not better than Clarkson right now.
I don't know. I think he can get a little too aggressive, but his vision is unreal. Like his ability to find little holes in transition is phenomenal. And remember, that's what made him so special coming out of Ohio State. It wasn't his scoring talent. It was his passing. Like there were like Magic Johnson comparisons when he was still playing in college.
Because the Lakers have the next Magic Johnson.
Well, just for the passing. Just for the passing.
Right, but it hasn't been there.
I think it has just in spurts. And again, Byron Scott. That's going to be my defense for any negative thing said about D'Angelo Russell. Just blame Byron Scott.
All right, fine. With the caveat that I have not even been slightly impressed with D'Angelo Russell's playmaking, sans Byron Scott. Maybe pick – all right, but that – all right, so the rankings wouldn't be the point. If you're asking me that you want someone to set up a shot for on the Lakers right now, I'd probably pick Clarkson over Russell. Russell's by far the more talented player, and I would assume he would be better in time. But just from what we've seen right now, I guess my point was – the Lakers have – I'm wondering how much freedom the Lakers give Ingram on offense, and maybe the thought process was as a member of the second unit, he would get to have the ball in his hands more, because he's at least, at bare minimum, a top five playmaker on this team right now. His passing was kind of understated in college. So I'm curious to see how they use him, because I don't really think they've cut him loose in the preseason very well. Granted, I haven't watched every game, but from what I have seen, I would like to see him work with the ball in his hands more, because – he's really good.
Yeah, I also trust Walton drawing up plays there. So I think that whatever he chooses to do, I'm going to be fine with. Also, Mozgov is the best playmaker on the team.
Where does this, before we go into wins, where does this team rank on defense?
Pretty close to the bottom still.
Better than last year, though.
Well, it's almost impossible to be worse.
Well, I mean, if the Mozgov signing doesn't hit on any front, you have, you know, Luol Deng.
That's one more defensive player than they had last year.
Well, that's the other thing, is if the Mozgov signing doesn't hit, like if he turns into this turnstile at the rim, you kind of have to put Brandon Ingram in the starting lineup, because that Lou Williams, D'Angelo Russell backcourt at the beginning, Russell should improve, and he already looks like he's trying harder. He tries to jump these passing lanes all the time, and it's kind of maddening, but that duo is probably going to be a disaster for a little bit.
To answer your original question, though, I don't think that this is – I can't guarantee this is going to be a bottom five defense. I think I'm pretty confident it's a bottom 10 defense.
Who – can you name five defenses that you think they might be better than?
No, I can't.
Brooklyn – there's Phoenix. There's the Pelicans have been in, they have Anthony Davis, but
I think they'll be a lot better this year with Davis, though. Well, assuming he's ever healthy.
You're kind of making my point for me.
No, I know. I think there's enough upside here that I'm not willing to commit to bottom five. They will probably finish in the bottom five. I don't feel comfortable making that guarantee.
I will do my trademark saying and relay to you that I will be floored if they're better than Bosa. I can't name five defenses. Even the ones that, some of them that I think could be worse, I'm not even sure. I could very easily see the Pelicans having a better defense than the – oh, don't – can we not? We're not on the right now. All right, so wins. What do you have for this team?
Well, first, we will say that Andy has this team finishing last in the Pacific Division with 25 wins.
He's a hater.
I had the Suns at 26. I have the Lakers at 27.
I'm going to go 28 and be – I know I'm normally the pessimist, but I'm going to be the optimist here. I think 28, 29, 30 might be within reach if, you know, D'Angelo Russell keeps playing like this. If everything goes right for them, they could be a 30-win team. But 27 is fair, but 28, 29, just because I feel like being on the cheerful side this morning.
Fair enough. So moving on,
Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. No, I assume that we both have the Sacramento Kings at number three. That organization is crazy and incompetent, and DeMarcus Cousins is probably going to be traded. Can we move on?
I actually don't think he's going to be traded this season. It'll happen over the offseason. But this team is
dumb.
A disaster. Why do they have almost as many bigs as the Sixers? Like, I don't want to see – I know Willie Cauley-Stein can defend pretty much any position, but I don't want to see him play power forward. And you have Kosta Koufos. And what are you going to do with your two big man rookies? It's just – like, Scal should get some playing time, but can he? It's just this team is such a mess. And now you've – one of your best weapons last year was being able to use Caspi as a four primarily, and you don't get
that
to do that.
That will never happen.
No, but that was one of your primary offensive weapons, and now you don't get to play like that. He is so much less intriguing as a small forward than he is a power forward.
I will go on the record saying that last year Caspi was the most underrated player in the NBA.
That's fine. And also by putting him at the three, you limit Garrett Temple's minutes that he could spend there.
And he's going to play behind Rudy Gay and Matt Barnes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, why is Matt Barnes there? And why did you give him $6.1 million?
Because we're talking about the Kings. A player like, I feel like that answer is obvious.
This team is going to – Rudy Gay is going to be traded. I know the Kings – I think Vlade Divac was talking about they want to compete, so they're going to keep him. But and some people keep saying if everything goes right for this team, that eighth seed is within reach.
BS.
If they're still in the playoff hunt by, like, December 1st, I won't – I don't know. I don't see them still being there. So I'll be, what's the word, floored if they're still in the playoff hunt for that long. Well, what is this?
The only reason this team is going to be better than the Suns or the Lakers is because DeMarcus Cousins is a flat-out superstar.
And should be healthy.
Yeah, that's the only reason. Everything else is a disaster. Like, I have no idea what your rotation looks like at almost any position. You're committing to guys like Aaron Aflalo and Matt Barnes at the expense of talents. The point guard situation is atrocious. I mean, Darren Collison is going to miss the first eight games of the season because of the domestic violence stuff. I don't even know what he's going to do when he's back on the court after he's been pushed to that backup role while Rajon Rondo was here. We don't know if Ty Lawson is still capable of playing basketball. Behind him, there's nothing.
Jordan Farmar is an NBA champion, thank you very much.
Jordan Farmar is an NBA champion, and that is going to mean a lot on this team.
I guess you could argue, and maybe this is what some people are thinking, because I kind of forget that Ty Lawson plays for the Kings or is even in the NBA.
I kind of forget the Kings are in the NBA.
No, you can't forget. They're too...
Yeah, just because of Boogie. Yeah.
Just because of what?
Boogie.
They're also too incompetent to ignore.
They're so incompetent that despite this roster being like fairly intriguing because of the big men, I'm not interested. Like, I think this is one of those teams I'm not going to watch much.
That's probably fair. Maybe they'll clear up some stuff with trades, but the saving grace for this team is I think that there's a chance they will have gotten one of the best free agency pickups in Ty Lawson, if he's even close to what he was. And he's quietly had, I think I've only seen him play one game, but he's quietly had a pretty good preseason. I'm looking up his numbers right now. Yeah, he's shooting 64% from the floor, 50% from three, but he's only attempted two. He does have fewer assists than Rudy Gay, which is weird, but he's still averaging over four a night. Oh, he's played in one fewer game. That's why. So if you hit on Ty Lawson, it's probably easier to feel slightly better about this team just because he doesn't need spacing to get to the rim or to create for others. But to say that you're expecting the 2014-2015 Lawson, you can't say that.
I kind of disagree with that too, because even if Ty Lawson is resurgent, like, he does need some spacing because this is going to be a really, really crowded half-court set. I mean, who on this starting lineup? Like, let's say he breaks out and is the starting point guard for this team and pushes Collison to the bench. Aflalo, Rudy Gay, Cauley-Stein, Cousins. Where is the spacing coming from?
I mean, Aflalo and Gay can easily be average three-point shooters. Rudy Gay's been close the last 2 years, and including last year, he wasn't there, but he was close, and the Kings' spacing was bad. And for Lawson, you want spacing if you're going to use him also as a shooter, because he needs to be open to knock down threes. He's not any, if he's ever under pressure, he's not going to make them, but he can slither through the lane. And I guess the other question would be, how many half-court sets? Well, I'm forgetting who their coach is. All right, it's an issue, but I think Ty Lawson, more so than any other point guard on the roster, can easily make something out of this clunky front court setup just because he's so good at getting into the lane when he's on. The issue here is you're already talking about if he's on, he won't be able to do it. We don't even know if he's going to be himself, which kind of underscores everything that's wrong with the Kings.
And I guess it might help them that Dave Yeager, the coach, has experience working with lineups that have like an excess of size, since he had the Zach Randolph-Marc Gasol combo in Memphis.
Those two are just...
But that's a little different than Cousins and Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, or Cousins and Kufos, or Cousins and Scal, whatever it's going to be. So
also, I feel like there's like a 50 to 60% chance that the Kings are just going to like straight up trade Rudy Gay for Greg Monroe.
A part of me, I said this when the Thunder did something, or there was an injury. I don't know what it was. I feel like he's going to end up in Oklahoma City. I don't even know what that trade would look like. And I just read that in a Zach Lowe column too, watch Oklahoma City Thunder on that front. But I remember saying it even beforehand. For some reason, I just feel like he's going to end up there. But Gay isn't going to last the season in Sacktown. We're in agreement. He's gone.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But Cousins will, I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think.
Just because it's so hard to move him and get adequate value midseason. I know he'll be on pretty much on an expiring. He will be on an expiring deal next summer. But when you're not dealing with the threat of that trade deadline, it sort of gives you more leverage.
Yeah. But can we move on from the Kings, because they're just depressing?
Well,
like, I don't want to talk about them.
Well, I guess there's two questions, because now that you have Yeager, is your defense going to be even adequate? I'm not sure they have. They don't have the talent at point guard.
No.
DeMarcus Cousins can be elite for like 10 games at a time. But Cauley-Stein is a monster. But yeah, that's it. Maybe their front court defense, like interior defense, will be okay.
Rudy Gay is not a disciplined defender at all. Aflalo has apparently decided that he doesn't care about playing defense. Maybe that was just a Knicks thing. But no. This is not going to be a good defense.
Not good. Will they be better than last year? They were in the bottom eight, I believe, and they allowed 106.3 points per possession.
Are you on NBA.com? Because I'm seeing different numbers.
Yeah, I don't. I trust player tracking data more than B-ball references. They were in the bottom eight for NBA.com. Will they climb out of the bottom 10?
No.
That's the question.
No.
Yeah, fair. Now no, their no, offense. No, no. What do you think? Where do you think they're going to be? That's like my honest, legitimate question. Where do you think they're going to be? I can't tell how much they're going to continue to run under Yeager, and how, like, if they're going to rely on the half court, they're in trouble. Even if Ty Lawson is himself, just because they don't have the half court talent. I'm not convinced that Caspi could be good in many half court sets.
Like, Caspi has to play for that to matter.
That's fair.
I mean, the offense is going to be fine when Cousins is on the floor because he's such a unique talent. When he's not, it's going to be a complete disaster. That's like my whole answer. I don't have Do you think things it, to say
it's impossible to tell during preseason because everyone's pace numbers get drummed up. Like there's pretty much the entire NBA is over 100 possessions per 48 minutes. And last season, I think there was like five teams that did that for the entire year. If that, there's a little bit more than five. So is this team going to be slow? What is it? That's my main concern. If you're running fast, you're going to create opportunities, and it helps that DeMarcus Cousins and Willie Cauley-Stein both can get up and down the floor. I just wonder if they're going to exploit that much under Jaeger, because he is more of a half-court coach, and the Kings' offense on paper is half-court offense.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to be a fit. Like, if Lawson is the starting point guard, I think you want to see this team push the pace, but I don't think they have the coaching staff to do that. Like, again, it doesn't make sense.
Maybe they will. I mean, they haven't been – the team overall hasn't been slow in preseason, but again, no one is.
Yeah.
So
it's just hard to know right now.
Wins, then. What do you have for them?
Andy has them in third in the Pacific Division with 35 wins. I'm going to be
generous.
More pessimistic, shocker, after all the nice things I've said about them during this podcast. I have them going 30 and 52.
I was going to say 30, 31. Can we say without question that the Kings are going to be better than the Lakers this season?
No.
Without question. Okay,
no.
That's all I want to say. They still haven't won 35 games since DeMarcus Cousins was drafted. Last year was their high with him, and that was 33. And I don't think they're going to be as good as last year. Just because even though Rajon Rondo doesn't really make a difference on the offensive end, he's better than anything they have right now in the backcourt or point guard-wise. And now we're assuming the offense is going to look so much different. 35 wins. Bailey's feeling generous this morning.
Apparently so.
That would bring us to...
the Clippers.
Oh, you think the Warriors are going to be better than them?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, pretty bold.
I'll
jump on that bandwagon.
My hot take this year is that the Warriors are going to be good at basketball. I feel pretty confident in that take.
I don't know. That's my hands already burning on it. What are we going to say about the Warriors? Everyone always tends to overrate new super team formations just because they look so much better on paper and it takes a while to implement. But now it seems that people, after watching the 2014-15 Cavaliers, the 2010-2011 Miami Heat, even the 2012-2013 Lakers, a lot of people are just like, well, it's going to take them some time, so this might be the year that people can get – like, no. Like, just look at this team on paper. Look at its, like, 7-8-man rotation. What do you do? And then Kerr, I think yesterday or the day before, said that his aim is to stagger Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. So you're going to tell me the Warriors are going to go probably less than 2 minutes a game in games that are actually competitive into the fourth quarter, and how many of those there are going to be. But they're going to average probably like 2 or 3 minutes a game without either Curry or Durant on the floor.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Are we just moving on to the Warriors first?
Sorry.
No, it's cool. We can do that. So I'll set an over-under for you on the Warriors. The lineup of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala, and Draymond Green. Basically last year's death lineup, except with this like Kevin Durant guy instead of Harrison Barnes. Over under 1,000 net rating.
Over under 1,000 net rating? Is that what you said?
It is.
I'm going to take the under.
Okay, I think that's fair. 500.
Can we sidebar it for a second and cry at this Jan Mahimi news? Going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. He had a torn meniscus in his left knee and underwent surgery, it looks like.
I love Jan.
Oh yeah, he went. He underwent successful surgery on Friday evening. Now I'm sad.
But we're talking about good basketball teams, so you should be happy.
Right, but I just wanted to let you know that one of our favorite defensive players in the league is probably not going to play until sometime in December.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Anyhow. The Clippers. We're going to move back to the Clippers from the Warriors, which I jumped us ahead to. What can we say about the Clippers? They look like the same exact team as last year, but Blake Griffin should probably be healthy for more than half the season.
Pretty much. I mean, it's like the same exact Clippers team as ever. Like, we had the same starting lineup with some fill-in at small forward. Like, they have no idea if that's going to be Mbah Mute, Paul Pierce, Wes Johnson, Allen Anderson. Apparently, they might even start Austin Rivers and push J.J. Redick to the three, which makes absolutely no sense.
To be fair, that lineup could be fun, but when you are talking about Austin Rivers as your starting three, you have issues. Yeah. Not Austin Rivers or Allen Anderson, for that matter. Yeah. Allen Anderson has not been good for a while.
But it doesn't. I mean, the three doesn't really matter because the quartet of Chris Paul, Redick, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan might be the best four-man lineup in the league, minus the Warriors. Like, let's just forget about them because they don't belong. The issue, as always, is the bench. Because for some reason, the Clippers decided that they were going to throw gigantic piles of money at Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers, even though...
I've already went off on this on Twitter and in articles. Why is Austin Rivers almost making twice as much as Wesley Johnson?
And why is he projected to play more minutes than Raymond Felton, who was legitimately a good point guard for the Dallas Mavericks last year? None of this makes sense. Like, their bench is going to be terrible again. I get like how people are getting a little bit more excited about it because they've added more depth with Felton and with Maurice Spates.
They lost Cole Aldridge. They didn't
exactly
add anything.
Like, Aldridge was probably their best bench player last year. And I know that sounds blasphemous because Jamal Crawford won Sixth Man of the Year. Jamal Crawford scored a lot of points inefficiently and played atrocious defense. He was a negative for the team. They were worse with him on the floor. Like, that is indisputable. Yes, he won the award because no one apparently cares about facts. But Cole Aldridge was legitimately good. He brought defense to the table when DeAndre Jordan was not playing. All of a sudden, your backup bigs are Brandon Bass, Maurice Spates, Bryce Johnson, and Diamond Stone. Good luck.
Yeah, I don't know how that second unit is going to defend at all. To your point, though, a previous point, it might help if Austin Rivers does move into the starting lineup, because then there's a better chance of Raymond Felton getting minutes, which would probably salvage the offense at points for the second unit. So there's that.
So I've already given you my hot Warriors take that they're going to be good at basketball. Here's my lukewarm take on the Clippers. Doc Rivers is not a good head coach, and they would be much better if they replaced him with a lot of other people.
I already had that take, so I think you're plagiarizing. I wrote about it and was killed on Twitter. It was bad. I ranked him, and I thought I was being like slightly generous. Maybe the top 12 when I was ranking coaches. I think it was top 12.
I think that's too generous.
He just, I don't get some of his like rotations. You should be staggering minutes more between Griffin and Chris Paul specifically. Like, you don't need to loop those guys together for the entirety of games, and maybe he'll do that this season because that's the only way for them to combat their depth issues. So it's just this team is gonna be good because their starting lineup is just so good, but it's really, really hard to like anything else about them. I do like Wesley Johnson as a defender. I think people have sort of slept on him there, and you bring him off the bench and he could play some four for you, that's good. But that front court defense, especially on Bryce Johnson injured, like, that's just going to be a disaster in terms of the second unit.
Tangent alert. At what point do we stop with this modern trend of giving head coaches the power to make personnel decisions as well? Because it doesn't really work with a few notable exceptions. Like, Stan Van Gundy has done a pretty good job of that in Detroit. Mike Budenholzer, to the extent that he controls personnel decisions, has done a nice job of that in Atlanta. But there are far more failure stories than success stories. Is failure stories even like a term? Did I make that up?
Probably like tales of failure would have been. But there are far more failure stories. You can start saying that, though. I'll allow it.
Okay.
It's more efficient.
Okay.
You probably could have just not added stories, so maybe you were less efficient. There are more failures than success stories.
I'm distracting from my own point, damn it. But the GM coach thing, any thoughts on that?
you need to have the right guy for it. And there are very few of those guys out there. I don't love it that Tom Thibodeau has that power in Minnesota now. I'm against it just because coaching is very hard and very demanding. And you tack on, you know, the team president or general manager duties or whatever it is. It's too much. And then you just need more people around you because to bounce ideas off one another, you need differing points of view. If you're the final say so on everything, what happens on the court, what happens off it, it's just split up.
Shouldn't it say something that like Greg Popovich does not do that for the Spurs? I'm sure he has some input and they value his opinion, but he is not the final decision maker. You know, Brad Stevens doesn't do that for Boston. Rick Carlisle doesn't do that for Dallas. Phil Jackson, since he's become in charge of all operations in New York, has not done a great job of acquiring talent. Like, the best coaches, the ones that we refer to as like the cream of the crop here, don't make those personnel decisions. Correlation or causation?
Yeah. It's just, there are people who can do it.
Yeah, but I feel like you should be automatically banned from doing that when you sign your son, who is a terrible NBA player, to a big contract and think about starting him.
Yeah. That's...
That should just be like in the new CBA.
Yeah, that's fair. And again, you can have a say still, like be consulted on and have an organization that values your input. Like, doesn't Greg Popovich, he holds like the presidential, doesn't he hold something in San Antonio, but he doesn't really...
But R.C. Buford's in charge of personnel. Yes.
So that's the perfect situation. And I'm not just saying that because the Spurs are perfect.
Newsflash. Dan wants NBA teams to copy Spurs.
Better than saying copy the Warriors.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much just like get lucky after sucking for a bunch of years and wind up with the salary cap anomaly. But anyway, so Clippers, going to be a top three offensive team if everybody stays healthy.
Maybe top two.
Yeah, that's fair.
And by that I mean like definitely top two.
Are they still going to be, they've kind of hovered around the top 10 in defense recently. Are they still going to do that? Losing Cole Aldrich really hurts their chances. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think they'll be a top half, like maybe around 12 or 13, just because that starting lineup.
Which is fine.
That starting lineup is so good. I mean, basically the story we're going to see, it is. The starting lineup we're going to start, the trend we're going to see almost every game, starters jump out to big lead, bench hemorrhages it away, starters make up ground, bench loses it, close game down the stretch.
That's fair. The Clippers better enjoy it this season too, because both Blake Griffin and Paul are free agents, and I'm kind of convinced that Chris Paul is going to end up in San Antonio.
I'm totally on board with that.
Anyway, wins. Team was at 53 last year when Griffin only played like 35 games or something. The West, the top of it, isn't nearly as good as it was last season. I'm going to say if everyone stays healthy, which is kind of a big assumption. With the Clippers, it always seems like everyone's injured. And when you look at the numbers, it's really not. But they all seem to just get banged up at inopportune times. I'm going to say 57.
Andy is more pessimistic and apparently really likes round numbers in his predictions today. So he has them at 50.
What?
Yeah, I know. I was surprised.
So they're going to win less games. With a healthy Blake Griffin.
He's providing no justification for that on this podcast.
We're calling him out on the next podcast when we do the Southwest. Do we have left?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we're calling him out.
Fair enough.
50's low for them, right?
Yep. I think so. But I only have them winning 53, mostly because of that bench. Like, I think that this is going to be a situation where they're better than 53 wins would indicate, but they're not going to win more games than that because they are going to rest players and keep that starting lineup as healthy as possible for the inevitable playoff run, and their bench cannot compete. So can I, is it allowed for me to say like 53 wins with like 60 win talent?
Yeah, that's fair. I guess I could see them doing that. It's good that none of us are on the Clippers are going to have the second seed train, though. I'm very perturbed at how many people have jumped off the Spurs.
Never like, doubt the Spurs.
Right, ever, and it's ever, not ever, like ever, they got worse, ever, much worse. Ever. The t- losing Tim Duncan and Boban and Dia hurts them a little bit on defense, but this team is still going to be phenomenal. So can we the Spurs are going to be the second best team in the West, right?
Yep.
Okay. Which brings us to
the best team in the West.
L Dubs.
The Dubs.
So would you just want to say 70 wins and we'll call it a podcast?
That is what Andy is doing. Just 70 wins and again, just not even on the podcast.
he's got these hot takes. He's not even here to justify them.
No, I mean, what can we even say about this team that like hasn't been covered this offseason?
Here might be the thing. Everyone talks about a learning curve. If there is one, do you think it's going to be – it's not going to be a quarter season or a half season type deal. Like this team just is going to be –
I think there's something to be said for what Steve Kerr has said in recent days, which is that he views this season as more about experimenting and trying new things and attempting to maximize the talent and really not focusing on chasing a record again, because now they realize how much more important that title is.
Right, and how you need to be fresh and not punch people in the nuts during the playoffs.
So I'll jump the gun and say that I have them – when I did my record projections, like, first of all, every year – that I do these, you know, you have to get to 1,230 total wins. And, you know, usually I'm pretty good at my initial estimates coming close to that. I was not this year. Like, I was way over because apparently I'm way too optimistic about, like, every team in the league except for the Kings. And I think the Warriors are one of the places where I could cut that down. So I had them at 63 wins. I feel bad about that. I feel like, kind of similar to the Clippers, they're a better team than 63 wins would indicate, which first of all is just bonkers that we have to say that about a 63-win team. But the experiments, the need to keep guys fresh, you know, a lot of the middle class of the Western Conference starting to catch up a little bit and being able to give them a scare on a night. You know, we saw them even last year struggle in games like against the Nuggets. You know, they had trouble. And I think we're going to see some more of those games just because they don't need to wipe the floor with everyone this year. They're going to be the number one seed in the Western Conference. At worst, they're going to be number two and still have home court in the first two rounds. So I don't think that there's any priority to chase 70, to chase, I guess, 75 now, which is within the realm of possibilities. Like, it wouldn't shock me if this team won 78 games. They're that good. But I don't think that we're going to see that astronomical win total.
I'm going to say 66 just because last year you want the number one seed, even if you're going to say you want to rest guys. So their ability to be a little bit more free with their rest and relaxation comes down to how many wins is it going to take to have a hold on the West. Last year, you needed 72 to win the Western Conference almost. You won't need it this year.
I think you need 60 to win it for sure. I don't think that the Spurs
just because
are a
61
team.
For the Spurs. No, they're not. But I think they'll get to 66 with the caveat that I think this is a 77 win team.
66 feels conservative too.
Right. I feel like I'm hedging between you and Andy. Andy might be the smarter of us, but this team isn't as deep as it was last year. But if JaVale McGee, if you hit with him, you know, you have David West, Zaza's good. Like, I can't even talk myself into them having a bad bench.
Patrick McCall looks awesome.
Yes, he does. I do want to see more of Ian Clark, and I feel like they'll probably give more minutes to him just because he has a little bit more experience. But anyway, like, this team is just so good, and it's still pretty deep on paper that even if you are going to rest a bunch of guys, like, it's like you said, 66 feels incredibly conservative. Even 70 just feels like, but
seven, like it honestly feels like they could stumble their way to 70 wins. You know, like, endure a major injury to one of the four superstars on this team, try piecing different lineups together, and still win 70 games.
Because even if you're resting, you have to rest multiple guys to really be, like, at a disadvantage. If you rest Curry,
you
still have Durant.
You can rest two of the five best players in the NBA, in Curry and Kevin Durant, and still run out Sean Livingston, Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green, and Zaza Pachulia.
Yes, crap. 66, I'm saying 66 just because I feel like maybe it'll take some... Stephen Curry is taking some time for him to find his shooting right now. He's only shooting 32% from three, so maybe this means the Warriors won't even make the playoffs. but I'm going to say 66. Just the point you made about rest, and I think there will be more nights where you're not seeing like, hey, Curry and Durant aren't going to – like maybe he'll just bench – do the Spurs where they used to bench their three or four best guys, and that's where they'll lose out on wins because it won't take as many to win the West this year. So there's no reason to chase higher. The caveat – what? How many wins if this team just went for it? How many wins?
Well, I was going to ask a similar question. What odds would I have to give you for you to bet on this team going 82-0?
I would never bet on a team going 82-0.
80 wins. So, 80 wins.
I mean, throw some odds out. I mean, not.
If I gave you 100-1 odds, would you take it?
I would need more than that.
You'd need more than that.
Yeah. Just because the NBA season is long. Curry and Durant aren't the most durable guys anymore. Even though Durant was phenomenal last year, but specifically Curry. Draymond Green will probably be suspended at least twice. So just like losing two games in the NBA is so easy. Even if you put if you gave me Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, and you threw LeBron James on this team, I still to win 80, like the margin for error is so slim to get to 77, I would say. Mm-hmm. If you were gonna give me those odds on them playing, going for it at 77, I would take it.
Okay. Here's another 77. Here's another fun tangent then. What team would you have to put together where you would be willing to take a 100-1 bet that they would go undefeated? Like if
all
you
12-man roster or just starting lineup?
12-man roster. Like if you took the Western Conference All-Stars from last year, would you make that bet?
No. I would need Towns on that team. Davis on that. I don't know if I need Davis on that team. I mean, on the spot, I don't know. Off the top of my head, I'd probably want most of the guys on this team, Draymond Green, Stephen Curry, Clay, and Kevin Durant. I would definitely want Karl Anthony Towns and LeBron.
So even if you could pick and choose your favorite 12-man lineup, would you make that bet?
No.
Okay. I think
to
I
go
would.
82-0, I
think I would. 100-1, I would bet you a dollar.
I bet well a dollar. Yeah, I would never take that bet just looking at it because the margin for error is just so slim. And there are just going to be games where there are people that know. Like, look at Team USA would be my prime example. There are going to be nights, even if you say they're going to go for it, they went for the gold and they half-assed it.
Yeah.
So that would be my concern. What odds would I need to give you to bet that Kevin Durant's current shooting slash will last through the regular season?
I would take it at any odds.
It's 50, 60, 100 is a shooting slash. All right, I'll give you 90% at the free throw line. Is he going to be 50, 60, 90? What odds would you need?
I have no idea. I think it's entirely reasonable that he could go like 55, 50, 90.
Yeah, 50, 50, 90 seems totally within reach to me.
Crazy. Just crazy.
This team is going to be amazing.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. Yeah.
Well, so I guess that does it.
So let's recap the win totals then too. Just for the few listeners who have made it this far into our already an hour long podcast, because Dan and I like talking.
That's you, Byron. No, Byron Scott didn't hit. I forget what I was going to say. Oh, sorry. Oh, man, I just read something that made me so angry. We'll talk about it off the air.
Okay, fair enough. I'll start with Andy's then. Andy has the Lakers in last at 25 wins, the Suns next at 30 wins, the Kings at 35, the Clippers at 50, and the Warriors at 70.
I have the Suns at 23, the Lakers at 28, the Kings at 33, the Clippers at 57, who I'm substantially higher on than either of you two, and the Warriors at 66.
And then I have the Suns at 26, Lakers 27, Kings 30, Clippers 53, and Warriors with an I hate myself 63.
There's no projection that does them justice.
No, I feel like you can find fault with pretty much any of the projections we're going to make for the Warriors, just because anything could happen with that team, except for them losing a lot of games.
Right, exactly.
Are you cool if I take the next segment?
Yes, I am, because it is that time again for...
Bacon! Bacon! Where's the bacon? I smell bacon! 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 Gotta be bacon! Only one thing smells like bacon! That's bacon!
Yes, Burns My Bacon has returned, like it usually does, and we're going to be handing the speaking stick to Mr. Adam Frommel.
I have, like, the most boring, generic Burns My Bacon ever, but I still think it's important this time of year because it's preseason basketball, and that means that we have injuries. And injuries suck, and they absolutely burn my bacon. Already, we've lost Chris Middleton for maybe the entire year, which kind of ruins what would have been one of the more fun teams in the entire league. We have Reggie Jackson set to miss like between 6 and 8 weeks with some knee tendonitis. That sucks. Ish Smith can do a decent job running the Pistons for a little while, but he does not play offense nearly as well as the guy he's replacing does. You know, Dan mentioned during this podcast that we've now lost Jan Mahimi. He was going to be a big piece for the Washington Wizards as that backup center for Marcin Gortat. And if you look up and down depth charts, you have so many guys right now that are dealing with these minor injuries. We don't know how long they're going to be out. It just sucks. Like, I like it when everyone's healthy, when we get to watch all the guys we enjoy following throughout the season. So, yay for meaningless basketball.
We should probably just throw Noah and Rose in there for full circle because they'll probably barely play this season. I think Noah is set to make his preseason debut tonight, I believe. $72 million well spent.
I'd be pretty okay with Rose missing the whole year.
But that is for another podcast. Injuries suck. They are awful. We have to hope at least maybe they won't affect any of the top 15 or 20 guys this year. You don't wish injuries upon anyone, but part of what makes the NBA season so fun is the superstars. So let's cross our fingers for no superstar injuries. But that will do it for us. If you would like to talk more with us, you can get at us on Twitter. Andy, who is not here today, can be found at Andrew D. Bailey. Adam can be found at Frommal09. That's FROMAL09. You can find me at Dan Favale. That's FAVALE. And we can sometimes be found on the official Hardwood Knox account that will not be as dormant as it's been at some point, we think, hopefully, maybe. That's just at Hardwood Knox. Until next time.
Shout out Bino Udry.
The iPhone XR is here at T-Mobile, and there's a whole lot to love, like those perfect portrait mode selfies you're going to share.
Nice.
And how Memojis now turn every FaceTime with the kids into fun time. In fact, the only thing you'll love more than your iPhone XR is getting it included in the price when you get an unlimited plan. That's right. Get both unlimited and iPhone XR included for just $40 a month. Sure, you can get unlimited somewhere else. But for the same price at T-Mobile, you get unlimited and iPhone XR. Join today and get iPhone XR included with your unlimited plan for just $40 a line for 4 new lines. Call 1-800-T-MOBILE or visit a store today.
$30 for essentials plus $10 for iPhone XR with auto pay and qualifying trade-ins via 36 bill credits. Customers may notice lower speeds and further reduction if using more than 50 gigs per month. Video at 480p for well-qualified buyers plus taxes and fees. Contact us before canceling or remaining balances due. Qualifying service and finance agreements required. Zero down plus $20.84 per month for 36 months. Full price $749.99, 0% APR.
The iPhone XR is here at T-Mobile, and there's a whole lot to love, like those perfect portrait mode selfies you're going to share.
Nice.
And how Memojis now turn every FaceTime with the kids into fun time. In fact, the only thing you'll love more than your iPhone XR is getting it included in the price when you get an unlimited plan. That's right. Get both unlimited and iPhone XR included for just $40 a month. Sure, you can get unlimited somewhere else. But for the same price at T-Mobile, you get unlimited and iPhone XR. Join today and get iPhone XR included with your unlimited plan for just $40 a line for 4 new lines. Call 1-800-T-MOBILE or visit a store today.
$30 for essentials plus $10 for iPhone XR with auto pay and qualifying trade-ins via 36 bill credits. Customers may notice lower speeds and further reduction if using more than 50 gigs per month. Video at 480p for well-qualified buyers plus taxes and fees. Contact us before canceling or remaining balances due. Qualifying service and finance agreements required. Zero down plus $20.84 per month for 36 months. Full price $749.99, 0% APR.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon. versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.